You are now listening to Jess is Lit on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Jess is Lit. Today is another day of the continuation of The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. I've been getting a lot of positive feedbacks from people. They seem to be liking this new reading series that I started. And they also seem to be liking the story that I chose, but we are almost halfway through the story. So if you guys have any recommendations on future reading series topics or books, please feel free to let me know. I'll definitely consider them. I do not have a story in mind yet to do after The Metamorphosis, but we'll just focus on finishing the story right now. So basically what happened is Gregor, you know, he has turned into a bug. And his family members have found out. His chief clerk has also found out, but he has left his house. Gregor's sister, is a very sweet person. She gives him food and realizes that he hasn't eaten the typical foods that humans eat. And so she displays several options of foods. And Gregor, he himself did not know this, but he is attracted to the foods that a typical bug would be attracted to. For example, waste products, garbage and whatnot, and so that is also very traumatic for him. And their family is slowly, in a sense, falling apart because of his sudden transformation. His dad does not seem to, I guess, very care that he has changed, but it is very stressful for Gregor at the moment. So that's where we left off. And so we'll get right into this. But before we do, I have a song to play. I will have a couple songs that play in between the stories, the readings. And so before we start off the readings, I'll have one song play and a couple of ads, show promos, and PSAs. And so we'll have those played and then go straight into the readings. So here we go. Here is Lonesome and Hunting. Or Lonesome and Hurting by Vern Chichu. Here we go.
Yes, you got. do, 'cause I spend my whole time thinking memories and thoughts of you. Now I'm lonesome and I'm hurting and I'm thinking oh so much how we used to love each other and the way so much how we used to love each other and the way we used to touch, how we used to love each other and the way we used to touch.
That the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. The jazz feature that focuses on a concept, an album, or an individual artist will be heard at the beginning of the show every Monday night right at 9 p.m. after our opening theme and announcement. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
What a lovely Vancouver summer night. I can't wait to sit by myself at the beach and look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is East Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. estudio.cafe.
If you're interested in maintaining a healthy lifestyle during midterms, finals, or any time throughout the year, then Freshie has you covered. Stop in today at Freshie on Westbrook Mall and order one burrito, salad, or bowl and get the second for free. Buy one, get one for free. Freshie on Westbrook Mall is your one-stop food as fuel choice for people on the move. Freshie, eat, energize.
It's summer in Vancouver and the days are heating up. It's important to drink water and take steps to protect your health. You can cool down at a misting station with downtown locations such as Oppenheimer Park, Pigeon Park, Victory Square, and Cathedral Square, as well as cooling centers which include Coal Harbor Community Center, Carnegie Community Center, and Evelyn Saller Center. To find more locations, search cooling centers in your browser, and Vancouver.ca has spaces with air-conditioned seating, water, and access to washrooms available all around the city. Stay cool and stay safe.
Welcome back to Jess's Lit. That was Lonesome and Hurtful. Lonesome and Hurting. I keep getting that wrong for some reason. Lonesome and Hurting by Vern Chichu. And some ads, PSAs, and show promos. We'll get right into the readings. We left off at a kind of a weird moment. Sister has brought him some foods, and he's been kind of surviving off the weird foods that humans don't really eat. And so we will get right into it. Now, Gregor's sister had to cook too, helping her mother. True, the cooking did not account too much, for they ate scarcely anything. Gregor was always hearing one of the family vainly urging another to eat and getting no answer but, "Thanks, I've had all I want," or something similar. Perhaps they drank nothing either. Time and again, his sister kept asking his father if he wouldn't like some beer and offered kindly to go and fetch it herself, and when he made no answer, suggested that she could ask the concierge to fetch it, so that he need feel no sense of obligation. But then a round no came from his father, and no more was said about it. In the course of that very first day, Gregor's father explained the family's financial position and prospects to both his mother and his sister. Now and then he rose from the table to get some voucher and memorandum out of the small safe he had rescued from the collapse of his business 5 years earlier. One could hear him opening the complicated lock and rustling papers out and shutting it again. This statement made by his father was the first cheerful information Gregor had heard since his imprisonment. He had been of the opinion that nothing at all was left over from his father's business. At least his father had never said anything to the contrary, and of course he had not asked him directly. At the time, Gregor's sole desire was to do his utmost to help the family to forget as soon as possible the catastrophe that had overwhelmed the business and thrown them all into a state of complete despair. And so he had set to work with unusual ardor and almost overnight had become a commercial traveler instead of a little clerk, with, of course, much greater chances of earning money, and his success was immediately translated into good round coin, which he could lay on the table for his amazed and happy family. These had been fine times, and they had never reoccurred, and they had never recurred, at least not with the same sense of glory, although later on Gregor had earned so much money that he was able to meet the expenses of the whole household, and did so. They had simply gotten used to it, both the family and Gregor. The money was gratefully accepted and gladly given, but there was no special uprush of warm feeling. With the sister alone had he remained intimate, and it was a secret plan of his that she, who loved music, unlike himself, and could play movingly on the violin, should be sent next year to study at the conservatorium, despite the great expense that would entail, which must be made up in some other way. During his brief visits home, the conservatorium was often mentioned in the talks he had with his sister, but always merely as a beautiful dream, which could never come true, and his parents discouraged even these innocent references to it. Yet Gregor had made up his mind firmly about it, and meant to announce the fact with due solemnity on Christmas Day. Such were the thoughts, completely futile in his present condition, that went through his head as he stood clinging upright to the door and listening. Sometimes, out of sheer weariness, he had to give up listening and let his head fall negligently against the door. But he always had to pull himself together again at once, for once the slight sound his head made was audible next door and brought all conversation to a stop. "What can he be doing now?" his father would say after a while, obviously turning toward the door, and only then would the interrupted conversation gradually be set going again. Gregor was now informed as amply as he could wish, for his father tended to repeat himself in his explanations. partly because it was a long time since he had handled such matters, and partly because his mother could not always grasp things at once, that a certain amount of investments, a very small amount it was true, had survived the wreck of their fortunes and had even increased a little bit because the dividends had not been touched meanwhile. And besides that, the money Gregor brought home every month, he had kept only a few dollars for himself, had never been quite used up, and now amounted to a small capital sum. Behind the door, Gregor nodded his head eagerly, rejoiced at this evidence of unexpected thrift and foresight. True, he could really have paid off some more of his father's debt to the chief with his extra money, and so brought much nearer the day on which he could quit his job, but doubtless it was better the way his father had arranged it. Yet this capital was by no means sufficient to let the family live on the interests of it. For 1 year, perhaps, or at the most two, they could live on the principal, that was all. It was simply a sum that ought not to be touched and should be kept for a rainy day. Money for your living expenses could have to be earned. Now his father was still hale enough, but an old man, and he had done no work for the past 5 years, and could not be expected to do much. During these 5 years, the first 5 years of leisure in his laborious, though unsuccessful life, he had grown rather fat and become sluggish. And Gregor's old mother, how was she to earn a living with her asthma, which troubled her even when she walked through the flat and kept her lying on a sofa every other day, panting for breath beside an open window? And was his sister to earn her bread, who she was still a child of 17, and whose life hitherto had been so pleasant, consisting as it did in dressing herself nicely, sleeping long, helping in the housekeeping, going out to a few modest entertainments, and above all, playing the violin? At first, whenever the need for earning money was mentioned, Gregor let go his hold on the door and threw himself down on the cool leather sofa beside it. He felt so hot with shame and grief. Often he just laid there, the long nights through without sleeping at all, scrabbling for hours on the leather, or he nerved himself to the great effort of pushing an armchair to the window, then crawled up over the windowsill and, braced against the chair, leaned against the window panes, obviously in some recollection of the sense of freedom that looking out of a window always used to give him. For in reality, day by day, things that were even a little way off were growing dimmer to his sight. The hospital across the street, which he used to execrate for being all too often before his eyes, was now quite beyond his range of vision. And if he had not known that he lived in Charlotte Street, a quiet street but still a city street, he might have believed that his windows gave on a desert waste where gray sky and gray land blended indistinguishably into each other. His quick-witted sister only needed to observe twice that the armchair stood by the window. After that, whenever she had tidied the room, she always pushed the chair back into the same place at the window and even left the inner casements open. If he could have spoken to her and thanked her for all the things she had done for him, he could have borne her ministrations better. As it was, they oppressed him. She certainly tried to make as light as possible of whatever was disagreeable in her task, and as time went on, she succeeded, of course, more and more. But time brought more enlightenment to Gregor, too. The very way she came in distressed him. Hardly was she in the room when she rushed into the window, without even taking time to shut the door, careful, as she was usually, to shield the sight of Gregor's room from the others. And as if she was almost suffocating, tore the casements open with hasty fingers, standing then in an open draught for a while, even in the bitterest cold, and drawing deep breaths. This noisy scurry of hers upset Gregor twice a day. He would crouch trembling under the sofa all the time, knowing quite well that she would certainly have spared him such a disturbance had she found it at all possible to stay in his presence without opening the window. On one occasion, about a month after Gregor's metamorphosis, when there was surely no reason for her to be still startled at his appearance, she came a little earlier than usual and found him gazing out of the window, quite motionless, and thus well placed to look like a bogey. Gregor would not have been surprised had she not come in at all, for she could not immediately open the window while he was there. But not only did she retreat, she jumped back as if in alarm and banged the door shut. The stranger might well have thought that he had been lying in wait for her there, meaning to bite her. Of course, he hid himself under the sofa at once, but he had to wait until midday before she came again, and she seemed more ill at ease than usual. This made him realize how repulsive the sight of him still was to her, and that it was bound to go on being repulsive, and what an effort it must cost her not to run away, even from the sight of the small portion of his body that stuck out from under the sofa. In order to spare her that, therefore, one day he carried a sheet on his back to the sofa. It cost him 4 hours' labor, and arranged it there in such a way as to hide him completely, so that even if she were to bend down, she could not see him. Had she considered the sheet unnecessary, she would certainly have stripped it off the sofa again, for it was clear enough that this curtaining and confining of himself was not likely to conduce to Gregor's comfort. But she left it where it was, and Gregor even fancied that he caught a thankful glance from her eye when he lifted the sheet carefully, a very little, with his head, to see how she was taking the new arrangement. Now, that was a bit of the metamorphosis. It really clearly expresses the uncomfortableness that Gregor's sister feels when she sees him. It seems like Gregor is, you know, trying pretty hard to kind of make up for all of this. He's even gotten some money paid for to support the family, but the physical change is just a lot for his sister and his family to deal with, and you can clearly see that through the readings. Now, before we move on, I have another song from Vern Chichu. The song is called Don't Worry, Son. We'll listen to this and then head back right in. We'll be right back. Here we go.
That someone the daddy want me to be. And I had something else in mind for me, just to be in me, living free for life. So don't you worry, son, you got your best I can for you. So don't you worry, son, you got your life to live. Just remember, that's what I want from you. What he had in mind for me to carry on is the business that ago. Couldn't understand what he was saying. Oh, thinking something else for me to do.
Now that was Don't Worry Son by Vern Chichu. Continuing on with the metamorphosis. For the first fortnight, his parents could not bring themselves to the point of entering his room, and he often heard them expressing their appreciation of his sister's activities. Whereas formerly, they had frequently scolded her for being, as they thought, a somewhat useless daughter. But now, both of them often waited outside the door, his father and his mother, while his sister tidied his room, and as soon as she came out, she had to tell them exactly how things were in his room, what Gregor had eaten, what he had conducted himself this time, and whether there was not perhaps some slight improvement in his condition. His mother, moreover, began relatively soon to want to visit him, but his father and sister dissuaded her, at first with arguments which Gregor listened to very attentively and altogether approved. Later, however, she had to be held back by main force, and when she cried out, "Do let me in to Gregor, he is my unfortunate son. Can't you understand that I must go to him?" Gregor thought that it might be well to have her come in, not every day, of course, but perhaps once a week. She understood things, after all, much better than his sister, who was only a child despite the effort she was making and had perhaps taken on so difficult a task merely out of childish thoughtlessness. Gregor's desire to see his mother was soon fulfilled. During the daytime, he did not want to show himself at the window, out of consideration for his parents, but he could not crawl very far around the few square yards of floor space he had, nor could he bear lying quietly at rest all during the night. While he was fast losing any interest he had ever taken in food, so that for mere recreation he had formed the habit of crawling crisscross over the walls and ceilings. He especially enjoyed hanging suspended from the ceiling. It was much better than lying on the floor. One could breathe more freely. One's body swung and rocked lightly, and in the almost blissful absorption induced by this suspension, it could happen to his own surprise that he let go and fell plump on the floor. Yet he now had his body much better under control than formerly, and even such a big fall did him no harm. His sister at once remarked the new distraction Gregor had found for himself. He left traces behind him of the sticky stuff on his soles wherever he crawled, and she got the idea in her head of giving him as wide a field as possible to crawl in and out of, removing the pieces of furniture that hindered him, above all the chest of drawers and the writing desk. But that was more than she could manage all by herself. She did not dare ask her father to help her, and as for the servant girl, a young creature of 16 who had had the courage to stay on after the cook's departure, she could not be asked to help, for she had begged as a special favor that she might keep the kitchen door locked and open it only on a definite summons. So there was nothing left but to apply to her mother at an hour when her father was out, and the old lady did come, with explanations of joyful eagerness, which, however, died away at the door of Gregor's room. Gregor's sister, of course, went in first, to see that everything was in order before letting his mother enter. In great haste, Gregor pulled the sheet lower and rucked it in, more in folds, so that it really looked as if it had been thrown accidentally over the sofa. At this time, he did not peer out from under it. He renounced the pleasure of seeing his mother on his occasion, and was only glad that she had come at all. "Come in, he's out of sight," said his sister, obviously leading her mother in by the hand. Gregor could now hear the two women struggling to shift the heavy old chest from its place, and his sister claiming the greater part of the labor for herself, without listening to the admonitions of her mother, who feared she might overstain herself. It took a long time. After at least a quarter of an hour's tugging, his mother objected that the chest had better be left where it was. for in the first place it was too heavy and could never be bought and could never be got out before his father came home. And standing in the middle of the room like that would only hamper Gregor's movements, while in the second place it was not at all certain that removing the furniture would be doing a service to Gregor. She was inclined to think to the contrary. The sight of the naked walls made her own heart heavy, and why shouldn't Gregor have the same feeling, considering that he had been used to his furniture for so long, and might feel forlorn without it? And doesn't it look, she concluded in a low voice. In fact, she had been almost whispering all the time, as if to avoid letting Gregor, whose exact whereabouts she did not know, hear even the tone of her voice, for she was convinced that he could not understand her words. Doesn't it look as if we were showing him, by taking him away his furniture, that we had given up hope for his ever getting better, and are just leaving him coldly to himself? I think it would be best to keep his room exactly as it has always been, so that when he comes back to us he will find everything unchanged, and be able all the more easily to forget what has happened in between. On hearing these words from his mother, Gregor realized that the lack of all direct human speech for the past 2 months, together with the monotony of family life, must have confused his mind. Otherwise, he could not account for the fact that he had quite earnestly looked forward to having his room emptied of furnishing. Did he really want his warm room, so comfortably fitted with old family furniture, to be turned into a naked den in which he would certainly be able to crawl unhampered in all directions, but at the price of shedding simultaneously all recollection of his human background? He had indeed been so near the brink of forgetfulness that only the voice of his mother, which he had not heard for so long, had drawn him back from it. Nothing should be taken out of his room. Everything must stay as it was. He could not dispense with the great influence of the furniture on his state of mind, and even if the furniture did hamper him in his senseless crawling around and around, that was no drawback but a great advantage. Unfortunately, his sister was of a contrary opinion. She had grown accustomed, and not without reason, to consider herself an expert in Gregor's affairs as against her parents, and so her mother's advice was now enough to make her determined on the removal not only of the chest and the writing desk, which had been her first intention, but of all the furniture except the indispensable sofa. This determination was not, of course, merely the outcome of childish recalcitrance and of the self-confidence she had recently developed so unexpectedly and at such cost. She had in fact perceived that Gregor needed a lot of space to crawl about in, while on the other hand he never used the furniture at all, so far as could be seen. Another factor might also have been the enthusiastic temperament of an adolescent girl, who seeks to indulge itself on every opportunity, and which now tempted Gret to exaggerate the horror of her brother's circumstances in order that she might do all the more for him. In a room where Gregor lorded it all alone over empty walls, no one save herself was likely ever to set foot. And so she was not to be moved from her resolve by her mother, who seemed moreover to be ill at ease in Gregor's room, and therefore unsure of herself, was soon reduced to silence, and helped her daughter as best she could to push the chest outside. Now, Gregor could do without the chest, if need be, but the writing desk he must retain. As soon as the two women had got the chest out of his room, groaning as they pushed it, Gregor stuck his head out from under the sofa to see how he might intervene as kindly and cautiously as possible. But as bad luck would have it, his mother was the first to return, leaving Gret clasping the chest in the room next door, where she was trying to shift it all by herself. Without, of course, moving it from the spot, his mother, however, was not accustomed to the sight of it. It might sicken her, and so in alarm Gregor backed quickly to his other end of the sofa, yet could not prevent the sheet from swaying a little in front. That was enough to put her on the alert. She paused, stood still for a moment, and then went back to Gret. Although Gregor seemed reassuring, although Gregor kept reassuring himself that nothing out of the way was happening, but only a few bits of furniture were being changed around, he soon had to admit that all this trotting to and fro of the two women, their little ejaculations, and the scraping of furniture along the floor affected him like a vast disturbance coming from all sides at once. And however much he tucked in his head and legs and cowered to the very floor, he was bound to confess that he would not be able to stand it for long. They were clearing his room out, taking away everything he loved. The chest in which he kept his fret, saw, and other tools, and was already dragged off. They were now loosening the writing desk, which had almost sunk into the floor, the desk at which he had done all his homework when he was at the commercial academy, at the grammar school before that, and yes, even at the primary school. He had no more time to waste in weighing the good intentions of the two women, whose existence he had by now almost forgotten, for they were so exhausted that they were laboring in silence, and nothing could be heard but the heavy scuffling of their feet. Now, we'll take a little break. It seems to me here that, you know, the mom, the sister, the dad, they're slowly... I can see this process of forgettingness, or forgetfulness, that the family is slowly forgetting and starting to eliminate Gregor's existence. Now, it might not be purely out of spite or just irritants or love. It might be a mixture of both, but you can see the slow process of Gregor's existence being taken away. Which is very sad, but we'll just kind of see how this whole thing unravels. We'll just take a quick break. I'll play you guys another song. This song is called Played a Game from Vern Chichu, so we'll be right back after this one. Here we go.
I played a game I could not win. I took a chance and lost my friend. Thought your eyes could never see. Fool I made inside me. Well, I knew it was over. There'd be nothing I could do but to lay my cards out on the table. I could no longer hide the truth. Now it's all up to you. I've got nothing left to lose. I played a game I could not win. Took a chance and lost a friend. Thought your eyes could never see. Fool I made inside. Been 2 long years now, and I haven't touched a drop. I often think about you. I got your picture on the wall, and I pray that tomorrow you'll come walking through my door. I played a game I could not win. Took a chance and lost.
your eyes could never see. Fool, I made inside of me. Played a game I could not win. Took a chance and lost a friend. Thought your eyes could never. Thought your eyes could never see. Fool, I made inside of me.
Now that was Played a Game by Vern Chichu. Now, we are going to continue on with some more readings. So let's go. And so he rushed out. The women were just leaning against the writing desk in the next room to give themselves a breather, and four times changed his direction, since he really did not know what to rescue first. Then on the wall opposite, which was already otherwise cleared, he was struck by the picture of the lady muffled in so much fur, and quickly crawled up to it and pressed himself into the glass, which was a good surface to hold on to, and comforted his hot belly. This picture, at least, which was entirely hidden beneath him, was going to be removed by nobody. He turned his head toward the door of the living room so as to observe the woman when they came back. They had not allowed themselves much of a rest and were already coming. Gret had twined her arm around her mother and was already almost supporting her. "Well, what shall we take now?" said Gret, looking around. Her eyes met Gregor's from the wall. She kept her composure, presumably because of her mother, bent her head down to her mother, and kept her from looking up, and said, although in a fluttering, unpremeditated voice, "Come, hadn't we better go back to the living room for a moment?" Her intentions were clear enough to Gregor. She wanted to bestow her mother in safety and then chase him down from the wall. "Well, just let her try it." He clung to his picture and would not give it up. He would rather fly in Gret's face. But Gret's words had succeeded in disquieting her mother, who took a step to one side, caught sight of the huge brown mass on the flowered wallpaper, and before she was really conscious that what she saw was Gregor, screamed in a loud, hoarse voice, "Oh God, oh God," fell with outspread arms over the sofa, as if giving up, and did not move. "Gregor," cried his sister, shaking his fist and glaring at him. This was the first time she had directly addressed him since his metamorphosis. She ran into the next room for some aromatic essence with which to rouse her mother from her fainting fit. Gregor wanted to help too. There was still time to rescue the picture, but he was stuck fast to the glass and had to tear himself loose. He then ran after his sister into the next room as if he could advise her, as he used to do, but then had to stand helplessly behind her. She meanwhile searched among various small bottles, and when she turned around, started in alarm at the sight of him. One bottle fell on the floor and broke. A splinter of glass cut Gregor's face, and some kind of corrosive medicine splashed him. Without pausing a moment longer, Gregor gathered up all the bottles she could carry and ran to her mother with them. Gret did that. She banged the door shut with her foot. Gregor was now cut off from his mother, who was perhaps nearly dying because of him. He dared not open the door for fear of frightening away his sister, who had to stay with her mother. There was nothing he could do but wait, and harassed by self-reproach and wondering where I just completely went off topic here. Gregor was now cut off from his mother, who was perhaps nearly dying because of him. He dared not open the door for the fear of frightening away his sister, who had to stay with her mother. There was nothing he could do but wait, and harassed by self-reproach and worry, he began now to crawl to and fro over everything, walls, furniture, and ceiling, and finally, in his despair, when the whole room seemed to be reeling around him, fell down onto the middle of the big table. A little while elapsed. Gregor was still lying there feebly, and all around was quiet. Perhaps that was a good omen. Then the doorbell rang. The servant girl was, of course, locked in her kitchen, and Gret would have to open the door. It was his father. "What's been happening?" were his first words. Gret's face must have told him everything. Gret answered in a muffled voice, apparently hiding her head on his breast. "Mother has been fainting, but she's better now. Gregor's broken loose." "Just what I expected," said his father. "Just what I've been telling you, but you, woman, would never listen." It was clear to Gregor that his father had taken the worst interpretation of Gret's all too brief statement, and was assuming that Gregor had been guilty of some violent act. Therefore, Gregor must now try to propitiate his father, since he had neither time nor means for an explanation. And so he fled to the door of his own room and crouched against it, to let his father see as soon as he came in from the hall that his son had the good intention of getting back into his room immediately, and that it was not necessary to drive him there, but that if only the door were open, he would disappear at once. Yet his father was not in the mood to perceive such fine distinctions. "Ah," he cried as soon as he appeared, in a tone that sounded at once angry and exultant. Gregor drew his head back from the door and lifted it to look at his father. Truly, this was not the father he had imagined to himself. Admittedly, he had been too absorbed of late in his new recreation of crawling over the ceiling to take the same interest as before in what was happening elsewhere in the flat, and he ought really to be prepared for some changes. And yet, could that be his father? The man who used to lie wearily sunk in bed whenever Gregor set out on a business journey, who welcomed him back of an evening lying in a long chair in a dressing gown, who could not really rise to his feet, but only lifted his arms in greeting, and on the rare occasions when he did not go out with his family, on one or two Sundays a year, and on the highest holidays, walked between Gregor and his mother, who were slow walkers anyhow, even more slowly than they did, muffled in his old gray coat, shuffling laboriously forward with the help of his crook-handled stick, which he set down most cautiously at every step, and, whenever he wanted to say anything, nearly always came to a full stop and gathered his escorts around him. Now he was standing there in his fine shape, dressed in a small, smart blue uniform with gold buttons, such as bank messengers wear. His strong double chin bulged over the stiff high collar of his jacket. From under his bushy eyebrows, his black eyes darted fresh and penetrating glances. His one-time tangled white hair had been combed flat on either side of a shining and carefully exact parting. He pitched his cap, which bore a gold monogram, probably the badge of some bank, in a wide sweep across the whole room onto a sofa, and with the tail ends of his jacket thrown back, his hands in his trouser pockets, advanced with a grim visage towards Gregor. Likely enough, he did not himself know what he meant to do. At any rate, he lifted his head on his feet uncommonly high, and Gregor was dumbfounded at the enormous size of his shoe soles. But Gregor could not risk standing up to him, aware, as he had been from the very first day of his new life, that his father believed only the severest measures suitable for dealing with him. And so he ran before his father, stopping when he stopped and scuttled forward again when his father made any kind of move. In this way, they circled the room several times without anything decisive happening. Indeed, the whole operation did not even look like a pursuit, because it was carried out so slowly. And so Gregor did not leave the floor, for he feared that his father might take as a piece of peculiar wickedness any excursion of his over the walls or the ceilings. All the time, he could not stay this course much longer, for while his father took one step, he had to carry out a whole series of movements. He was already beginning to feel breathless, just as in his former life his lungs had not been very dependable. As he was staggering along, trying to concentrate his energy on running, hardly keeping his eyes open, and his dead in his dazed state, never even thinking of any other escape than simply going forward, and have almost forgotten that the walls were free to him, which in his room were very well provided with finely carved pieces of furniture full of knobs and crevices. Suddenly something lightly flung, landed closely behind him, and rolled before him. It was an apple. A second apple followed immediately. Gregor came to stop in alarm. There was no point in running on, for his father was determined to bombard him. He had filled his pockets with fruit from the dish on the sideboard and was now shying apple after apple without taking particularly good aim for the moment. The small red apples rolled about the floor as if magnetized and canted into each other. An apple thrown without much force grazed Gregor's back and glanced off harmlessly, but another following immediately landed right on his back and sank in. Gregor wanted to drag himself forward, as if the startling, incredible pain could be left behind him. But he felt as if, nailed to the spot, he flattened himself out in a complete disarrangement of all the senses. With his last conscious look, he saw the door of his room being torn open, and his mother rushing out ahead of his screaming sister in her underbodice, for her daughter had loosened her clothing to let her breathe more freely and recover from her swoon. He saw his mother rushing towards his father, leaving one after another behind her on the floor her loosened petticoats. Stumbling over her petticoats, straight to his father and embracing him, in complete union with him. But here Gregor's sight began to fail, with her hands clasped around his father's neck as she begged for her son's life. Now that is it for today. We just finished chapter 2. A big brawl has occurred with Gregor and his father, and chaos has just broken loose. You'll tune in to my next episode where I will be reading chapter 3. But thank you all for joining today's episode. We basically just ran over chapter 2 of The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. And again, if you guys have any recommendations on future stories that I can read, let me know and I'll be happy to go over them. But until then, we'll be continue on with The Metamorphosis by Franz Kafka. And I will see you guys again in my next episode, which will be happening on the 31st. I booked a fill-in. It'll be happening on the 31st, 7 p.m. Vancouver time. But anyways, thank you all for joining. It was a good chapter, and I will see you guys soon in another episode. Have a great evening, and I'll see you guys again. Bye-bye.